Well, hello out there, and welcome to the Local Spotlight Show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-Counties. All right, my guests today, a couple, but they've got a lot going on, this couple, so we're going to do two separate episodes. First, we'll do Stephanie Abajay.
Yes.
Welcome, Stephanie.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And Dave Stein. Welcome,
thanks.
Dave.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yes. So today, Dave, we're going to concentrate on Stephanie. We're allowing you in the studio, and you can comment, and, you know, need to jog her memory about something.
That's the way it should be. Ladies first.
Ladies first.
I love it.
All right. Stephanie Abajay. Now, Stephanie, where you come from, girl?
So I was born and raised in Toledo, Ohio, so I'm a Buckeye.
A Buckeye.
Spent my childhood there, my youth there, my formative years. My father was in the bar business. My father was a big personality, Syrian, 100% Syrian. His parents were born and raised in Syria, so he's first generation American. And my mother was Irish, so we had the dark, swarthy Syrian marrying the beautiful, fiery-haired Irish girl. And then they had us, five kids in the family.
Well, so, I can relate to that bar thing.
Growing up
in the bar.
Of course.
Well, of course, I didn't grow up in it, but... Actually, I did grow up in it. I grew up a lot. What I used to always say about the bar business is the bar business is a great way to learn about people.
Absolutely. It's like a psychology class every single night.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, and if you're trying to figure out how you want to talk to people, you know, you mess up on one person, don't worry about it.
Because there's 10 more coming in the door behind him. Exactly. Exactly. You're a therapist. You're a boyfriend. You're a girlfriend. You're the priest. You're everything to these people. It's really, it's a great experience. It's a great way to learn how to talk to people and handle people. Yeah.
That's why I always think it's good for young people to get a job.
Absolutely.
In the hospitality business.
Absolutely. Service industry. Mm-hmm. That's the way to do it.
I mean, it helps them out a lot.
It really does. It really does.
So you were born in it.
Born in it. My father's bar was very popular. It was called the Peppermint Club. He had Fats Domino and the Everly Brothers.
It was a nightclub.
Jerry Lee Lewis. Oh, yeah. It was a nightclub, live music. It was the biggest one in the Midwest at the time. And then he pivoted from rock and roll and turned it into a country bar where Kenny Rogers' song Lucille was written.
Yeah.
So it became a very popular country western bar. So it was a pretty big place. It was a pretty formative part of our lives.
Wow. Now, can I ask you, how big a place was this? What were you seating? You remember?
500 or 600.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty big.
That's a big place.
You know, it was like an old school nightclub. You know, little round tables and lamps on the tables and waitresses in cute little outfits.
It was live music seven nights a week with a house band.
Yeah. Yeah.
Live music seven nights a week with a house band, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen all the posters and
read
all the old newspaper articles, and it was really something.
Dwayne was really something. Yeah. So my dad had that, and then my mother was a nurse, so she had a very conventional job, and my father had a very unconventional job. But I went to college at Kenyon College in Gambier, Ohio, a little tiny school in the middle of nowhere. This was in the 80s, so I was a Russian studies major in college because the Cold War was raging, and I wanted to be a diplomat or not a spy, but I wanted to somehow get involved in politics. And
you needed to know, did you learn Russian?
I did learn Russian. So when I graduated from college in 87, I spoke Russian. I had foreign policy background. So never occurred to me to move back to Toledo. I immediately moved to Washington, D.C.
Okay.
And my first job in D.C., 87, so Reagan's president, Gorbachev is in office, Cold War is still icy hot. I worked for a political consultant who was very conservative and helped him run his... he had a couple newsletters, some news services. He had some colorful clients. I'm still under a non-disclosure agreement, so I can't tell you who his clients were, but they are terrifying people or were terrifying people. So I did that for a year. And then I became the managing editor of a foreign policy magazine, which was a pretty hard pivot.
Yeah.
So I did that for 4 years. And then in 1992, I became an appointee in the Bush administration, the administration of George Herbert Walker Bush. Bush won, as we like to say.
So what was your job working for Bush?
I was a special assistant at what was then the United States Information Agency. USIA had Radio for Europe, TV Marti, Radio Mexico, I think, the Bureau of Broadcasting, WorldNet Television. It was basically the U.S. government's official propaganda arm. So we would make documentaries and make programs about how to export democracy, how to build democracies, how to have free and fair elections. And then we would record these on VHS tape and put them in diplomatic pouches and send them all over the world to the embassies. And then they would have gatherings at the embassy and the locals would come in. I mean, this is 1992. So this is way before the internet, way before, I'm not even sure CNN was around then. Maybe it was, but it was really low tech, but that's how the U.S. government reached the hearts and minds of people around the world. And I did that for a year, and then Bush lost to Clinton.
Yes. So then what'd you do?
So then I was out of a job. I mean, I summarily dismissed with all the other Republicans, and I wanted to stay in D.C. because I love D.C. I'd been there for 4 or 5 years already.
Wasn't it Perot that messed that all up for you?
Well, yes, probably. But I think Bush might have done it for himself.
Well, that's probably true.
And then so I needed a job. So I started bartending for a friend of mine.
In D.C.
And at the same time, I had gotten a job with the Joint Forces Journal to be their editor in chief. And I would have to spend 6 months a year on the military base in Garmisch, Germany. And the job had a really high level security clearance. So while I was waiting for the security clearance to come through, I was bartending because I didn't have any money and I couldn't get a job. No one's going to hire a former Republican in a Democratic town.
Right.
So I started bartending and I made so much money bartending. I thought, why would I go back into journalism? Why would I be the editor of the Joint Forces Journal when I can make a grand a night in 1990? What is it? 93 at this point.
Oh, wow.
That's a lot.
That's like $2,000 a night today.
Maybe even more. I mean, it was insane because D.C. was such a young, it probably still is, but it was such a young, vibrant town. And these bars were really, really popular.
Yeah.
So one thing led to another. And the guy I was working for said, let's open a bar together. So we opened a bar and then we opened another bar. And then my sister was a political appointee and she lost her job. So she and I opened our own bar together in a neighborhood called Adams Morgan. And that was July 18th, 1994.
Huh. And all you grew up in the bar. So you kind of knew it inside out and backwards.
I did. But I tell you, when my sister and I decided we were going to open a bar, we told my father and we thought he'd be thrilled. And he was so mad.
He
said, girls, you come home right away. And so we flew back to Toledo and we were like, Dad, it's going to be great. He's like, I didn't put you girls through college. I didn't live those long nights for you guys to be in this bar business. I wanted something better for you guys. And we were like, but listen, Dad, we're going to call it the Toledo Lounge and we're going to have the Duane, a hamburger named after you. And it's going to have an interior just like the Peppermint Club did at your bar in Toledo. And then
he
the tears
came
rolled down his cheek and he was like, oh, girls, I'm so proud of you. So we opened our bar. And
how'd that go? Great.
It was amazing.
It was
these, you know, two young, might I say, then we were beautiful young girls.
Well, you're beautiful now.
Thank you. refugees from politics, opening a bar in Adams Morgan, which was then a very, very ethnic neighborhood. So we opened an all-American bar and grill in the heart of the most ethnic part of D.C. And it was just a hit from day one. It was amazing. We were open 7 days a week. We served lunch, brunch, and dinner. It was a hit. It was huge.
Sounds like it.
And then very first day we were open, our very first customer, lovely young woman, came in. Got her dollar bill. She signed the dollar bill, put it on the wall. She went home and she said to her roommate, I just met your future wife. And that was Dave Stein.
Yeah, that was my roommate, Brenda.
Yeah. She was our very first customer at the bar.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
I just moved to D.C. that week and Stephanie's bar opened the same week that we moved down there. And my roommate, Brenda, just been a very good friend of mine since high school. She saw Stephanie and said, oh, it's over for
it's
you.
Perfect.
Yeah, so we went down the next night, and I met Stephanie the next night, and then I just sat at the bar until she finally agreed to go out on a date with me.
Now, what were you doing in D.C.?
I had moved down there to go to law school.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd finished college, and I'd worked for a year, and then I went to law school at George Washington.
So then you started hanging out at Stephanie's bar?
Every night.
Every night.
Every night that she was working.
Well, and he was very smart because he wouldn't just hang out. He would bring all of his law school friends to hang out. So on any given night, there'd be 10 people. He'd bring in 10, 15 people. And the weekends, he'd bring 20 or 30 people. Very, very smart. The key to my heart then was through my wallet. So well, I was everybody, like, we welcome
to
them.
Everybody knows the key to the man's heart, the key to the woman's heart is to make sure her business flourishes if you can. There.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Oh,
that's fun. Yeah. But you're not in the bar business now. So what happened in that?
So finally, we had the lounge in 1994 and 1997. We opened a nightclub. And then in 1999, we opened a restaurant. And Dave Stein and I got married in 1997. So I opened three different places. Dave Stein was practicing as a lawyer. So at one point, we had three bars. Well, a bar, a restaurant, and a nightclub, all on the same street.
How did you handle that?
It was we were young, and I mean, it was fun. You know, when you're, 28, 29?
Yeah.
It's fun. You can stay up until 4, 5, 6 in the morning and then get up at 11 and do it all again.
Yeah, and it was like the family business, too. It was Steph and her sister, and then her sister's husband, my brother-in-law, he's a great graphic artist and designer, so he would take care of all the design and all the stuff you need, like menu design and all that kind of stuff. And then I would build the restaurants and keep them running and help bounce and bartend and, you know, throw kegs around and whatever else you needed to have done. And now, then I also made all the desserts from having recipes from growing up here in Jersey County with my mom and my grandmother. And then, you know, Stephanie just had a bunch of great young people working for her. And she and her sister were like the unofficial mayors of that area of Washington, D.C.
It was amazing. These were very popular places.
Yeah, people beat a path to their door. They ran great businesses.
And it was great. I mean, we were very successful. It was really fantastic. But one year, it was the summer of 2001, and we were back here in Jersey County visiting Dave's mom on the farm, and we had a little boy. His name was Oscar. He was 2 at the time, and it was like the 4th of July. Maybe it was Fair Week, whatever it was, and the weather was unaccountably beautiful, and we're out there on the farm, and we just exhaled, and we thought, man, we've got the bar, the nightclub, the restaurant, your law practice. It's just kind of insane. What if we just moved here, just left D.C. and moved here instead? And something came over us. We were obviously insane. But we went back to D.C. and put everything up on the market. Well, put two of the businesses up and sold them and told my family we're moving to a farm in Illinois, in Dow, Illinois. And they were like, where the hell is Dow, Illinois? But then September 11th happened.
Yeah.
Oh.
And we were living in D.C. when that happened.
We thought this is our sign to leave D.C.
Yeah.
So it took a year to sort of resolve everything, and we moved here in August of 2022.
Hey, if you're just joining us, I have Dave Stein and Stephanie Abajay talking about life in general, and how they got here. You sell everything.
So August 2002, yeah.
But okay, Dave, I got to ask you this.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you're starting to be an attorney, and
yeah.
you got your law degree.
Yep. Graduated in 97.
And you
took the bar, bought a house, opened a restaurant, got married. Passed the bar.
Got a job.
Started a job as an attorney. All that summer of 1997.
It was a big summer.
But you always had a hankering to work with your hands. With wood, right? Because you said you're building stuff at the bar and et cetera. You know?
Yeah, all the way through college and in law school as well, I always had just small woodworking business going.
Like, okay.
Whether I was repairing things for people or just building small things. And then I guess it was around 95, 96, Cigar Aficionado came out, and everybody was smoking cigars. It was Sylvester Stallone and, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger on the cover of GQ smoking cigars. And I met up with this group of guys in D.C. at the time who owned Georgetown Tobacco, and I started making humidors for people. And my whole thing was making humidors from American hardwoods harvested sustainably in the Midwest versus stuff you could buy on the commercial market, which was like crazy teaks and, you know, mahogany or whatever. So just a small little piece of business that I started doing while I was still an attorney, and even before I was an attorney, while I was still in law school.
So you sell everything, or most everything?
We kept the bar. The bar was a cash cow. So we kept the bar, sold the nightclub, sold the restaurant.
Sold the house.
Sold the house, relocated David Stein Furniture back here to the Midwest. And Dave had always been coming back and forth to get his lumber from the family farm anyway. So we just, we bought a big, beautiful old house on 40 acres on Bartlett Road.
Well, it doesn't sound like he could just sit around and not do anything. So what'd you do
Well,
then?
Chris, that's a good point. I thought, I'm going to be a farm wife, and I'm going to just raise my son and enjoy farming. And it was that was not going to happen for me.
But you tried.
I lost my mind. I was so bored. You know, being able to leave your brownstone in D.C. and walk and get the paper and a cup of coffee and moving to the country where you can't, you just, you can't walk anywhere. It was a tough landing for me. I have to say that first year back was really, really hard. And then I opened the paper one day and there was an ad for an office assistant at a new newspaper that was opening in Jersey County called the Jersey County Journal. And that we had been living here for a year already. And I thought, I'll get a part-time job. I mean, what the heck? The paper hadn't even come out yet. And I interviewed and I got the job and worked half days as a receptionist. And then probably within 3 months, I think I was the editor of the paper. And then I was the regional editor. This newspaper chain had three, the Jersey County Journal, the Green Prairie Press, and the Calhoun News Herald. So I became the regional editor of all three of those.
And who was the owner of that paper?
It was Bruce Campbell.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he owned a bunch of papers,
yeah.
And this was this local sort of consortium. But that was the greatest job I've ever had. It was so much fun.
I went
to school board meetings. I went to county board meetings. I went to city council meetings. I went to fair parades. I went to Biggest Cantaloupe. I went to Fair Queen. I mean, I covered everything for Jersey County, and I loved it. That's how I met so many great people, and I was accepted by the community and became part of the community. And it was just such a meaningful job. I really loved covering politics and being able to report, like, this is actually what's happening. And I don't know. It was just the greatest job. I just absolutely loved it. I absolutely loved it. And then, I did it for 4 years.
Yeah. Then what? What happened?
There was an incident where a young man was accidentally... he died. He was tased by a police officer.
I remember that incident.
And it was, I think it was in November. I can't remember the date, but...
That was a big incident.
It was a really big incident. It was national news. I mean, the New York Times came.
Right.
And the paper, I don't really want to go into it too much, but
yeah,
I didn't like how the paper handled it. And I had to cover it, and it was a really hard story to cover. I felt bad for the police officer. I felt very bad for the young man who died and his family.
Mm-hmm.
And the paper, the paper did a lot of digging and got some personal records from the boy, from his life. And it was really hard to have to report on things that I felt we shouldn't be reporting on.
Okay.
And so I just had a change of heart. And I resigned.
Okay.
And then I just sort of took some time off. I know you remember that incident. It was really
actually
really hard on the community.
Yeah.
And hard on his family and hard on everybody involved.
It was tough. It was a tough incident.
It really was.
I've actually talked to some police officers that were involved in it as well. And it was just like, things just didn't seem to go right, you know?
It just was
and there was a
snowball.
Lot of misconceptions and different things going on.
Yeah.
But so then you...
So then I left, and then I think this is now 2006, and I immediately got several jobs writing for magazines and newspapers freelancing. So I started writing news articles and personal articles, and then that led to ghostwriting. People asked me to help them write their books, and so I started ghostwriting, and over the next 6 years... 6 or 7 years, I ghost wrote 6 books for people.
Cool.
Memoirs. And then I wrote a lot of articles for a magazine in Washington, D.C. And freelance editing and helped raise the kids. At this point, we had 2 kids. And then also started working quite a bit with Davis Stein Furniture, helping with marketing, sales. We did a lot of furniture shows, so we would travel quite a bit and leave the kids with a grandmother, Kathy Stein, who was a huge help.
Now, when did you write your book?
So I wrote my book.
The book for you.
The book.
A Bar in Toledo.
It's called A Bar in Toledo, The Untold Story of a Mafia Frontman and a Grammy-Winning Song.
I love it.
And the Mafia frontman is my father, Dwayne Ebejay, by the way. I wrote an article for this magazine in Washington, D.C. in 2018 about my father and what an amazing life he had. Son of Syrian, one of 16 children, son of Syrian immigrants, rose through the ranks of, you know, post-war Toledo to own one of the most popular bars in the country. And a friend of mine who's a TV producer read the article and fell in love with it. So in 2020, he pitched the idea of turning that article into a TV show, sort of like a Sopranos meets Goodfellas kind of thing.
Right.
And we got a little traction, and then COVID hit, and all television production shut down.
Shoot.
So one of the producers on the show said to me, we should turn this into a book. And I was like, no, no one wants to read about this. And no, we need it. So for a year and a half, my co-author Dom and I traded chapters back and forth and wrote this book. And he did a tremendous amount of research with FOIA requests, Freedom of Information Act requests, and found out that my father, his business partners were made men in the mob, which I did not know growing up. I just thought my dad's friends were colorful, you know, Johnny, Freddie, and Whitey Bisesti, these cool guys who drove big Cadillacs.
Right.
I had no idea that they were actual made men in the mob and that the FBI was surveilling my house the entire time I grew up in Toledo. Like, I didn't know any of this stuff. And my father had recently passed away, so I couldn't ask him about anything. So we had to base a lot of the information in the book on FBI reports and police reports and eyewitness reports and just kind of piece it together. What I thought was like this great Norman Rockwell childhood with the Coke and Pepsi trucks delivering right to our house. It was actually because the mob was behind it. You know, yeah. Just this crazy. So that's what the book is about.
A Bar in Toledo. Now, where can listeners get this book?
They can get it from me, my website, stephanieabijay.com, or they can find me on Instagram or Facebook, and I have copies for sale.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, fantastic. Well, you know what? We've ran out of time on this episode.
I have so much more to say.
We'll be back.
We'll be back. Part two.
That's right.
Thank you so much. This was really fun. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. We'll see you in just a bit. Okay.